Corvette. I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And I'm really excited to bring on the next guest, Latham Thomas. She's born and raised in California, a graduate of both Columbia University, where she earned a degree in visual arts and environmental science, as well as the Institute for Integrative Nutrition. She's a certified holistic health counselor who mixes her passion of plant physiology, botany, holistic nutrition, fitness, yoga, and green cuisine into a lifestyle program that supports the various needs of her clients. Specializing in maternal and child wellness, Latham served as program coordinator for the Healthy Moms Healthy Babies Project for the Be Healthy organization. She's the co-founder of Panella Productions, a company that educates parents and children about food through cooking classes and events. She's developed partnerships with Vogue magazine, Destination Maternity, Jurlique, and Euphoria Spa to produce events for expectant and new moms. And she is the founder of Tender Shoots Wellness and so much more. We're going to be talking about that, all of that, in the next half hour. Welcome, Latham, to It's All About Food.
Hi, Karen. Thank you.
Hi. I'm so glad we found a moment in your very busy schedule to chat. And I love talking to people like you, people who walk the walk and do it so beautifully and radiantly.
Thank you.
I've watched a few of the videos, especially the one you were recently featured in Experience Life on the front cover.
Yes.
Very exciting. And I love the little trailer that they did for you online. You can see all of that at tendershootswellness.com.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a really fun shoot to do.
Yeah. Well, let's just start from the beginning. Were you brought up to be on this path that you're on today, eating so healthfully and spreading joy about what's good for our bodies and good for the planet?
Well, I grew up in California and actually in Oakland. And growing up there, I just was really privy to, plants being all around us and just being in this ambient landscape that had beautiful plants, wild edibles, medicinal herbs. There was a lot of food that was grown in either where I lived or houses nearby, and my cousins and I would like go and pick the plums of our neighbor and then go and, you know, it was just really like an experience that was so sensory. So there was a connection to food that was really visceral, right? Because it was part of like my upbringing. It wasn't like a separate thing. Going to the grocery store was an experience, but there was also the reality that a lot of this food just grew around you and you could just sort of pick it from nature. So I had an awareness at an early age about that. I also was really interested in medicinal herbs and wild edibles, and was able to spend some time with a master herbalist studying that. And that helped me develop a deeper connection with the environment, and also noticing that there's healing powers in plants that that are beneficial to us when prepared in our food on a daily basis. So that when I made that connection as I got older, that was sort of like the beginnings or, you know, the rudiments of what I would do later in life, and had no idea at the time.
Well, one thing I love about parts of California is the fact that food is all around us. There's trees bearing fruit, and the weather is so great that there's a lot of food produced there. And we've gotten so detached from where our food comes from. I get really excited when I see fruit dropping from the tree. It's just something so deep, and this detachment is really hurting us in a bad way. And Oakland's a really interesting place, and you mentioned that you had this attachment or this introduction to food with food all around you, but there are plenty of food deserts there as well. It's kind of like
there
a mix of everything.
Yeah, Yeah, it's very interesting there because now, I mean, I haven't been in so long because I've been living in New York for 13 years. So when I go, it's pretty infrequent. But there has been, in certain parts of Oakland, yeah, you cannot get food. It's like being in certain parts of New York City where there's only, like, bodegas and Chinese food restaurants, right? You know, in Oakland, there's now been this sort of movement towards people taking charge of their health with creating access vehicles. So, like in West Oakland, for instance, there's a movement with like the People's Grocery where they have a food truck that has all the sustainable produce and sustainably grown produce from local farmers, and they just basically bring it into communities that are underserved. One of my colleagues and basically like my brother, Bryant Terry, who is a food activist and chef in Oakland, is also doing this work, really helping to sort of broaden this conversation around choices that we have with when we spend our dollars, but also like, you know, making healthy choices with what's available too, and making sure that people feel this connection that I was talking about earlier through food and his work. I'm glad that he's out there because they do need it in Oakland too. But where I lived in particular, it was just one of those places where the food was growing everywhere. This is like, you know, in the 80s, so it wasn't like as, you know, I guess it wasn't as polarized as it is today.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so now you're in New York, and you're doing this great business where you're helping new moms and future moms get connected to their bodies and what they're eating. And it's kind of crazy, but there hasn't been a lot of information, especially with doctors, about what you feed your child even before it's born is critical to the rest of its life.
Right. Yeah, so there's a lot of research that's coming out now, especially on that. You know, people think that it's just like, oh, well, whatever I eat, you know, is going to build. They don't really make the connection that what the things that they're eating are building their baby, but the things that they already ate build their baby, too. So whatever you have stored in your tissues is what makes up your baby, not just what you're eating now. So a lot of it from the very beginning, because especially when we don't know that we're pregnant, like the first sort of 10 weeks or so when people don't even know for the most part, is when your body is actually drawing upon these stores that you have in your tissues, right? And so if you've been sort of not as mindful about what you've been eating prior to that time, your body has like sort of poor building blocks to work with. I like to work with people that are thinking about it on a conscious level, like, you know, in the conception phase, because there's a lot that we can do to help them cleanse their bodies, cleanse their lifestyles out, so that they can ground in the pregnancy experience and feel really empowered in choices that they're making. And then I get people from the whole spectrum. I get people really late in pregnancy. They're like, oh, okay, let's see what we can do here. But there's always something that can be done because the prenatal body is so dynamic. It's always changing. So it's always anything that you can do good, a little teeny bit goes a long way. So I'm just honored to be able to help support women in that part of their life. And for me, I know when I was pregnant, I was looking for this sort of thing, a little hand-holding, because I knew things to be true, but I wanted somebody to validate it, you know, and kind of say, oh, yeah, this is the way to go. Do this. This will feel good. Try that. Don't do this, you know. And I just saw that there wasn't anything like it. So, you know, I have this entrepreneurial spirit, and I thought, you know what, I'll just do it myself. So that's how I came to grow this practice.
Yeah, it's great. It's not just getting your thoughts validated, but there's so much negativity that you get if you're thinking about doing something that sounds helpful, like whenever people talk about not eating dairy.
Yeah,
you know, some people can really get explosive, like, oh, my gosh, you're pregnant and you're not having dairy. Don't you care about your child? What's wrong with you? And it's
really
that nutty.
I heard my fair share. I heard my fair share of that, for sure. I mean,
yeah.
It's very interesting, too, because you come up against backlash, but a lot of people's fears are projected onto you in that time, right? So things that they wish that they had done or that they didn't do, you internalize a lot of other people's fears because it's a time where you're super vulnerable. So it's also a great time to have some hand-holding and have someone provide gentle guidance and affirm what you already know to be true. So, help you to connect to that truth, because sometimes it's just a matter of like connecting some wires, right? And once you feel like, oh wow, like I'm totally tapped in, like I know, I really do know what I should be doing. And most of us do. It's not that you need somebody to tell you. Sometimes it's just you need some support. And that's the main reason why people find that they're not as successful in making lifestyle changes, is that they don't feel supported, right? They don't have that to fall back on to make sure that they follow through with some of their choices. And then once they can work out that piece, the behavioral piece, I think is a little bit easier to implement.
Well, that's why people like you and I are doing what we're doing, just adding
exactly
a little bit of support in the world, right? And, you know, another thing, you probably realize this too, giving your body great nutrition is good for yourself and for your future child and your children, but that support is so important for the emotional aspect, because even if we're eating all of the right things, if we're giving ourselves the wrong emotional message, that can have negative impact too.
100%. Food only works, it's like magic. It's like, you know, magic only works if you believe in it, you know?
Right.
And food is the same way. Like, yes, it can, it's full of vitamins and minerals and all these phytonutrients, and there's so much in food, right? However, you know, the magic can really work for you if you believe, right? They say there's people who, you know, did all the right things, like she did wheatgrass and she did this and she did that and was very meticulous and still, you know, grew tumors, right? It's like there's something about, it's not just what you eat, but what you think, you know? What you eat, what you think while you're eating. If you're stressed out, like you're not digesting, you're sending stress hormones, so you're actually creating, you know, fat deposits around your belly, right? So there's like all kinds of things that need to go into this practice of mindfulness. So it's not just like what you eat, but how you eat, when you eat, you know, where you eat. Are you eating on the go, or do you just take the time to sit down? How do you value yourself? You know, if you create this healthy relationship with yourself and get in right relationship with yourself, then all your choices are totally aligned with that principle of like self-love and self-care. And that's another thing that I really sort of help moms with, because we're with women, there's just a, there's almost like this legacy we inherit when we're born of, you know, selflessness. And, and it's not, you know, it's great to help others. I mean, it's like the foundation of my work. I think it's what you're supposed to do too, is help others, but not at the expense of yourself. So I think that if we could just help people to figure out that that they're worthy, you know, and it's important that you don't just fix a great meal because you're having company, but fix a great meal for you, even if it's just you, you know. Or treat yourself to a juice, and people are like, oh, but it's expensive. It's expensive to get sick, too, right? So I think, you know, making healthy choices, but also feeling valued, feeling like you deserve to have those, you deserve that choice. You deserve to make that choice is key as well.
That's such an important concept on so many levels. And this selfishness idea is... there's a good kind of selfishness and a bad kind of selfishness, but what you're talking about is so important, this solid foundation in loving and nurturing ourselves, because one thing that drives me nutty sometimes is I'm promoting a healthy plant-based diet, and one of the reasons I do it is because I don't believe in killing animals and animal suffering, and there are many animal rights activists that don't eat animals, but they don't eat a healthy vegan diet. And they're not giving out the right message, and they're not healthy. And so if they're not here, if they're not energized, if they're not well, they cannot do their work.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. It's so important.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it's. I'm glad there are vegan donuts out there, but it's not an everyday food.
No, it isn't. I think it's not about. It's not about feeling like we have to do. Yes, it's nice to have some. I guess, sweets and things that you feel like, oh, I could just still have this, and it's a better option. But not always is it a better option, you know, like, because some of these things that they make these vegan foods with, these vegan fast foods, or not convenient foods, but what you call, like, sweets and things, are not the healthiest for you. So I think people tend to think they're like, you know, they call them the fast food vegans and whatnot, right, that don't really still like are lacking the consciousness about the health aspect, but they're like, well, I'm not eating meat, but you're not eating anything that's fortifying either, right? So it's like, I guess it's making that connection that it's about like it's about coming back to you know, the land, like looking at the plants as foods that provide information for the body, right? And if we're lacking that connection because we're eating a lot of things that are processed, we're not getting the information that our body needs to navigate this landscape that we're living in. And that's why local is so important and seasonal is so important, because our body assimilates this information from food that that's been here for gazillions of years, right? Not like foods that have been made in the past 50 years, right? Or the past 10 years, even like just created in the lab maybe this year. Right, there's no sort of there's no place to ground in that, you know, like your body doesn't, what's it going to get from that? It's except for like some you know, some stored fat on the body someplace, right? It doesn't even process necessarily. So it's like kind of like growing these connections back to our roots and these foods that like our ancestors ate, and not like eating it in the same way, like, okay, you have to have like, you know, food that doesn't taste or that's not prepared well. Like, food is prepared really well still, but that sort of, like, you know, beckons us past, you know, like, and grounds us in a place that we are. Because that's one of the things, like, if you sit down and you have a really good meal, like, you're not, and you're in good company and you feel good about yourself, you're not going to reach for, like, these fringe foods and make poor decisions or feel like you're in a place of lack, you know? And
yep. There's a thing about progress and evolution, and as a civilization, I want to think that we're moving forward, and there are some things about progress that are really great and some things that aren't. And even when it comes to food, we don't have to eat exactly like we ate 10,000 years ago. I mean, we've learned
exactly.
A lot. But the same, also, we've done a lot of things that aren't natural and aren't healthy. So we should be taking the good things from the past and bringing them forward, and then, you know, doing beautiful things with them. But
exactly.
I want to move to the medical community. I understand you're also trained as a doula.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
That's a beautiful thing. And that's really not ingrained in our culture. It's more popular outside of the United States. And,
right.
I'm not certain about this, but how is the medical community, the traditional, conventional medical community, accepting of doulas in the delivery room?
Yeah, it's getting to be more so an acceptance. It's more so because now, you know, physicians are seeing that, you know, doulas are cutting back on the time of the labor. You know, the presence of a doula actually can cut the labor time in half. There's statistical research on this. Also, there's less intervention. There is less incidence of augmentation with certain drugs, right, to augment labor, and induction as well. So I think that, you know, at first there was sort of like this whole kind of like, oh, who are the witches that are coming in, you know, but now it's a little bit like, okay, you know, these people are educated, they understand the advocacy, they understand the medical terms and actually what's happening in the physiology of labor and birth. And so, but they're also helping to support the woman, and the nurses cannot provide that bedside manner and that constant support that a doula can. And also, like, you don't know what the situation is going to be for a laboring mother, if she's going to have you know, a loved one there or a partner or any support, and it's just good to have a constant presence in someone that you know who comes to serve in that capacity. You know, it's something that should be, that everyone should just have access to. It's becoming more so of a necessity. Like, people are starting to say, okay, that you have to have a doula if you do this. So, also with some of the, you know, films that do a lot of speaking about advocacy, like there's The Business of Being Born, which is very, had a lot of traction in the birth community and outside, which helps people to get more familiar with the term doula and I guess that kind of concept. But what I see is, in my experience, the doctors are cool as long as you come in and you're cool, you know? So it's like, it's an attitude, I believe, as well. And so I've had a great experience working with women in that way. A lot of them are people that I've worked with in prenatal yoga and in nutrition, and then I support them in this way as well. But after that, I think like most of the reactions are from the people who are there, the caregivers, like the nurses will share with the medical staff, like, you know, this is really great. Like, you need more people here, you know, and some hospitals have actually staffed doulas. Yeah.
Well, it's similar to what I was just saying before about progress. There's lots of great things that have come out of our education and our knowledge over time, and then there's stuff that disconnects, the things that aren't good that we're bringing forward. And in the medical community, certainly, we have that disconnect. So many doctors don't know anything about other parts of the body aside from their specialized part. They
right.
don't know anything about nutrition, and we don't work that way. We're big, integrated, whole beings, and so many things come into play. And I love the concept of a doula, and I'm thinking, just talking to you, that we should have some person for anyone that is going through some sort of hospital procedure, somebody that's there on your side. You know I went through some crazy medical experience with ovarian cancer 5 years ago, and I fortunately had my sister, and mm-hmm. not only was she really a top intelligent attorney, but you know, she was there for me, and in some ways she said so many times that she felt like it was happening to her, and so I felt like, you know, she was really there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I made sure she was there all the time. You know, when I woke up in the recovery room, I insisted I wanted her there. And it just makes all the difference to have somebody that's focused just on you and your emotions and your desires, separate from the procedure that's going on.
Yes. Yes.
Well, not just
that's
separate.
One of the
I mean, the doula's not entirely separate, but the doctor, especially when the doctor's doing it, you're not responsible for the delivery, you're focusing more on the mother.
Yes, which is also, you know, really, is a really important piece, and also too, like, just making sure that, you know, in a hospital, you have to remember, they're not there to provide you with healthy food. They're not. So, like,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people are in the hospital, and they, when as soon as they have the baby, or as soon as they have a surgery, or whatever it is, they're, you know, you get like pancakes and Jello and, you know, Coca-Cola, and it's like craziness. So it's really insane. You see this and I'm like, what are they going to give you to eat? You know, I just had this is like a marathon. You ran a marathon essentially by giving birth, and then they want to give you some Jello. So
right.
It's another piece for me that's huge is making sure that parents have food. And every time that I go meet with people, I also introduce them to new foods and things that will be fortifying for whatever stage they are in the pregnancy. And we make sure that we prep meals. Like, meals are so important to have either in the hospital or, like, I survey the area where I know they're going to deliver to make sure that we have access to food as soon as that mom has given birth. Because,
what are some of the foods you recommend for a woman who's just delivered?
We do a lot of protein, but not like intense, just like plant-based. I always promote a vegan diet, and people make whatever choices they want to around that, but I make sure they get plant-based protein because it's easier to assimilate, for one, but also it's going to be less wreak less havoc on the baby who is not going to be able to digest the proteins that come through the milk from animals, right? So I have them have usually some kind of like protein-rich smoothie right after. Almonds, like handful of nuts are always good. We'll have like a little piece of fruit, fresh juice or coconut water. Coconut water usually throughout we'll do the labor because you lose a lot of fluid. There's a lot of hot. It's actually cool. It's very cooling, so we'll do that. Also to fortify the mom and her electrolyte levels because you're really really warm during that time. So it's a great way to make sure that you stay balanced. We'll also do right afterwards. Like I make a granola that I'll bring, and we can like put that over an acai smoothie or something like that. We'll do there's so many different things, but a lot of it's like foods like salad and tempeh with like beans and quinoa and avocado and like a nice dressing. Then I'll fortify the dressing with omega-3 oil along with a little bit of olive oil and lemon juice and. So
okay,
like
now I'm getting too hungry. Too hungry.
I'm getting hungry. Yeah. But we'll make sure that it's like this kind of, really good food. It looks beautiful. It tastes really good, but it's also really good for her. And it's great to have as a first meal when you come out of it. You don't want somebody handing you like a piece of dried toast and some salad.
And good luck finding these foods in most hospitals.
Good luck. Yeah.
So we just have a couple of minutes left, and one thing I wanted to mention, you certainly walk the walk, and you're a mom, and I just wanted to take a minute and talk about your son because he's just amazing and spectacular and definitely a reflection on his upbringing.
Oh, thank you.
And he's obviously intelligent. I saw some of the clips with him as a DJ, and he's gorgeous and just as articulate as you are, and it's just amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Well, I mean, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Does he eat like you do?
Yes, he does. I mean, I believe that all kids should eat. I mean, I don't believe that there's kids' foods, and so he always would eat what I would eat when we go out. He eats what I eat. I would just give him some of my food, and at home, we cook together. I believe that kids should learn very early, just take some ownership over their meals. So I would always give him a little type of prep activity to do. And he loves baking. He loves making soups. He loves making ratatouille. He learned it off of Ratatouille, the film. And then he's like, I think I'm going to make this ratatouille. I was like, let's do it. So, he's a big lentils and split pea and, brown rice and seaweed. He actually made a seaweed popular at his school. Started like last year or something. He was bringing it to school every day. And now the kids want to trade seaweed. And the parents are like, where do you get the seaweed from? And I'm like, oh, my God, I guess it's catching. So it's pretty cool. But he's a very good eater. And I really think it's about my attitude, like just knowing that, he's just going to like this. And this is how we eat. And I think that if you're really relaxed and not like really uptight, that your child will be comfortable too. I mean, there are picky eaters, but I think that has a lot to do with the attitude of the parents too. The parents are stressed out and thinking the kid won't eat this, or they just
claim
it. They say, "Oh, my son doesn't eat that." Of course they don't, because look what you're declaring that they won't eat it.
I've heard that so many times.
Yeah, it's like, well, how do you know? How do you know you're not them? How do you know? So it's just really about, I've heard people, adults tell me that they don't eat certain things, and then they try them, and they're like, Latham, I don't eat this, but I love this, how you made it. And I'm like, see, like, there's always room. So I think that there's, you have to provide choice, or at least the illusion of choice for them, and help them to, like, navigate their own relationship with food. But you have to provide the foundation, and you also have to do what you expect them to do, because if you're eating poorly and you expect them to eat well, it doesn't work that way. So they model behavior. So it's important that you're doing exactly what you expect them to do, so that because kids will look to you like, well, wait, why isn't she doing it, right? So they really notice these things. So to me, kids are important.
We just have a few seconds left, and I wanted to say, we live in a culture of most people follow, they don't lead. And there are so many images out there for people to follow that aren't the best for the planet, that aren't the best for their health. And what I really love about you and about your son, too, is you're the kind of people that people should be following. You're beautiful, you're radiant, and you're doing great things. So I want to thank you for that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you. And
you
and
your show, it's tremendous. And you're actually shining light on a lot of issues, but also bringing a lot of light into the world by sharing your message and your passion and bringing together all these different voices along the spectrum. So thank you for your work.
Okay. Well, thank you. And we're going to get together for a green juice sometime. Okay, and your website,
TenderShootsWellness.com. Forthcoming website will be MamaGlow.com, and the book is coming out fall 2012, so look out for that.
Oh, I can't wait. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, be well. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.